It's not a great story, is it? It's a story of the people of God turning against him and choosing to go a different way. And this was effectively the start of the people of Israel in the land that God had promised them. And what I want to do for a few moments is just to sort of paint the picture of what happened then and also what happened next for the next 700, 800 years. I'm not going to take that long, but to sort of explain what happened in their story after this time. And what Esme has read to us sort of summarizes the account of what happened in the period that we know as judges. They were probably not judges as we would think of them. They were sort of tribal leaders. They were those who could call the people together to fight a common enemy and to sort of provide guidance and direction. And as we saw in that account, they were necessary because it didn't take long for the people of God to follow the path that Moses and Joshua had warned against. And there's a catalogue of things that they did wrong. They didn't know the Lord. They forgot what God had done for them. Even in light of all the amazing things that he had done to rescue them from Egypt and to bring them safely through the Red Sea and through the Promised Land, through the wilderness, through 40 years of wandering, and into the land that he had promised to Abraham hundreds of years before, they forgot. And they chose, instead of worshipping this God, this unique God, this God who had called a people to himself, they chose to worship all the other gods that were around them. And they found that it was impossible to ignore this God in safety. God became angry. God turned them over to their enemies. And that gives us an insight into who God is. God is a loving God. God is a caring God. But God wants the best for his people. And he knows that the best is for them to live in relationship with him. And when they turn against him, he is angry. And in response, he turned them over to his enemies. And we start to get this cycle. If we could put a slide up, Bob, we can sort of see this cycle. That they started to live evil lives and to do things that were wrong. Then God oppressed them and sent people to oppress them. And we get people like the Philistines and who came in and did things that were not helpful. And after a few years of this, they would cry out to God and say, "Look, it's a bit difficult. Can you help us?" And God heard and graciously sent a judge to fix the problem. And you may know some of these judges, people like Gideon, and the story of Gideon's fleece and the fact that he was able to defeat a huge army with 300 men. And we know of Samson and all the escapades that he got up to. And there are other judges whose names are less well known, people like Othniel and Ehud and Shamgar and Deborah. Some, we know something of their story. Some, we just have a one-liner that says, he was a judge. Maybe not a very distinguished judge, but he was a judge. And we get this cycle. And when the judges were there, it was a time of peace. And then the judge died. And after a bit, the people turned against God. And the cycle started again. They were oppressed. God sent another judge. And so on. And so forth. And as you read towards the end of Judges, you find distressing stories of what is happening. And you see real evidence that these people, chosen by God, have so little thought for God and are doing wicked things. And in fact, the summary at the end, nearly the end of the book, says this: in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. And in there's a hint, not just about what was going on, but about what was going to happen. They were going to move from the period of having these tribal judges to having a king. And onto the scene comes a person called Samuel. Samuel, whose birth is a miraculous account that we read at the first couple of chapters of 1 Samuel. And he grows up in God's presence. He serves, he follows God, and he becomes the last judge of the people of Israel. And if we looked at his story, we would see that God was with him, that he led and guided the people well. But towards the end of his life, the people looked at him and thought, yeah, but who's going to carry on after you? And this is their assessment of Samuel. In 1 Samuel 8, we find this. You are old, they said. Your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. And here there is a hint of sadness and something going wrong, because these people were called to be unique, not like the other nations. They were to be a people who would follow God and where God and his representatives led them. But suddenly they're saying, actually, we'd quite like to be like everybody else. And all these nations around us that we can see, they have kings. So can we have one as well? God was not pleased, but he agreed to go ahead with it. And so we get the first king, a person called Saul, who was chosen to be king. He was anointed by Samuel. And he started to pull all these different tribes together. And we see the start of the United Kingdom of Israel being established. He started well. He lost his way. He disobeyed God. He didn't listen to what Samuel said about how he should behave. And at the end, instead of his kingdom going on to his son, his kingdom was taken away. And a man called David was chosen to replace Saul. A good king. But a king who made some serious mistakes. And we'll come back and think about David a little later. David was succeeded by his son Solomon. And we know something of Solomon's story, that he was wise above everybody else. He built the temple in Jerusalem. It was a time of great prosperity, but also a time when the people started to feel that they were being oppressed and thought, well, it's all right for the king and his friends, but we're not doing so well. And there were the murmurings and the rumblings of unhappiness. And this really comes to fruition as Solomon dies and his son Rehoboam takes over the kingship of the nation. He doesn't listen to good advice. People rebel and the kingdom is split into two. Two tribes in the south, 10 tribes in the north. And so the kingdom in the land that God had promised, in the land that God had brought his people to, was divided. There was a succession of kings in both places, in Jerusalem and in Samaria, which was how the northern kingdom was referred to. Some of these kings followed God and led the people well. Some people followed idols and led the people astray. And the northern kingdom becomes so evil, so away from what God had wanted for them, that God allowed the Assyrian Empire, who was one of the major world powers at that time, to come and take them into exile in 722 BC. And so many of the people were taken out of the land, never really to return. The southern kingdom lasted a bit longer. They were doing a bit better, but not much better. They were exiled into Babylon in 605 BC. And a few years after that, the walls of Jerusalem were torn down, the temple was destroyed, and it was though everything was over. And so the people go into exile, no longer free in their land. But because of the way in which they have turned against God, because of the way in which they have disobeyed him, after warning, after warning, and after opportunity to turn back to God, God did what he had promised he would do. We can read about it towards the end of Deuteronomy. God took them out of the land with a hope, with a promise, with an expectation that one day they would return. But that's a story for another time. So that's the spread of 600-700 years. We're not exactly quite sure, but it's that sort of time frame. A time of judges over the various tribes. A time of a united kingdom. And the next slide sort of tries to summarise this in a single picture. Samuel leading the people, and then Saul and David and Solomon. The only kings over that total nation. And then splitting and going into exile. In many ways, a sad story. A story that started with such great promise, as the people say, yes, we will follow God. But a story that ends in defeat and exile. And we don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know where our God is. We don't know what is happening. And I guess there's a challenge for each one of us, for churches, for Christians today, that say, you know, it's one thing to start well, and that's good, and that's important. But it's also important to carry on and carry on doing what God calls us to do. Otherwise, it's easy to find ourselves outside of his favour, outside of his plan, outside of his purposes. And he is not able to bless us and lead us and guide us into the things that he has for us. And that's what the people experienced. That's what the people found. And it's what many people have found through the centuries. As life gets hard and they don't know what to do, and it's easy to just do what everybody else does, they find that instead of being in the centre of God's will, they move further and further to the sides until they realise that they are no different to anyone else. That's the summary of the story. There are more details in here, if you want to look at them sometime. Lots of details. A great thing to read and check up on. But at the centre of all of that, one of the bright shining lights, a bit tarnished, but normally a bright shining light, is a king called David. And we'll think about David a little bit later. But we're going to take a break. We're going to take up an offering. We're going to sing. We're going to read. We're going to pray. And then we're going to come and think about David a little bit more. So let's come and think about David, this great king, the central, pivotal king in the history of Israel. That one who was spoken of as a man after God's own heart. He was a man who was loved by God, a man who was chosen by God. And we see some of that in the passage that Sue read to us. God reminds David that he was a shepherd. He was the youngest of his brothers. He was looking after the sheep. He was protecting them from bear and from lion. And God put his finger on him and chose him and said, he is going to be the ruler of my people. And so he brought him out of the sheepfold. He led him into great exploits. He was able to defeat the giants. He was able to become a great leader in the army of Saul. We also find God saying to him, reminding him that I have been with you wherever you have gone. And behind that, there are many, many stories. For a time, David had to run away from court. He was under attack from Saul. Saul wanted to get rid of him. He had to go and live in caves. He had to go and live with their enemies. And looking back on those times, God was able to remind him and to say, I was with you. And I've got rid of your enemies. They are gone. You are safe. You are secure. You are king. And then God says these wonderful words, I will make your name great. And there are echoes here of what God said to Abraham hundreds of years before, when God called Abraham to go into a land that I will show you. And God says this to Abraham, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And it's as though all those intervening years have been telescoped together, and the promise that God had given to Abraham, he's giving it again to David and saying, you are my person. Your name is going to be recognized and acknowledged as great because I am going to make you great. And God is going to give him rest from all his enemies. So God was saying to David, I have done things for you. I am going to do more things for you. I'm going to care for you. I'm going to watch over you. I am going to make you the person, the king, that people will remember because of how great you were. And one of the great things about this passage is it's not just saying, I'm going to do this for you, but it's saying, I'm going to do it for your people. That the people of Israel won't be disturbed. That God is setting up a king and a kingdom. The people will no longer be oppressed as they were time after time after time in the book of the Judges. Because God has placed his great king over them. And so they, as a people, are secure. And there's that wonderful sense that a king needs a kingdom. And because God has placed this king in his city of Jerusalem, and God has done all these great things for him, then the people are also going to be blessed. And when we think about our King Jesus and where God has placed him and the authority that God has given him, then we can be confident that we as his people will be secure and will be safe. But God doesn't stop there. He doesn't just say, look, it's okay for you, and that's going to be the end of it. But he says, I'm actually going to make it happen so that when you have gone, your son will reign after you. There's going to be a dynasty following from you. There's going to be a successor. I will be a father to him. I will lead him. I will guide him. I will correct him. I will point out when he does wrong, and I will discipline him. But I will not take my love away from him, God says, as I did with Saul. And so there's this promise to David, not only for him, but for his son. And that his house and his kingdom will endure forever. What an amazing promise for God, the recognized ruler of everything, to come to this man and say, I have made you king, I have given you a kingdom. You are going to be safe from your enemies. And that blessing is going to go on to your son and to the one who's going to follow him. And your house and your kingdom will be established forever. No wonder David was thankful. We would see if we'd continued through that chapter, the response of David as he thanks God for his greatness and his kindness towards him. But the problem is, as we alluded to earlier, as we looked at that span of history, it doesn't quite work out like that. The kingdom fails. Solomon did build the temple, as God said he would, But the kingdom was divided after him. In 1 Kings 11, there's a prophet who comes and speaks to a person called Jeroboam, the one who'd be the first king of the 10 tribes in the divided kingdom. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. See, I'm going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and give you 10 tribes. And this is consistent with what we saw earlier, that the people turned away from God and they went into exile. So the problem that we are presented with is, how do we reconcile these two things? How do we reconcile the promise of God? I will establish you, your house, your kingdom shall endure forever before me. Your throne shall be established forever. And then a couple of generations later, God tearing the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and giving it to somebody else. How do we square these two things? And the answer is, as so many times we find in the Old Testament, that the promise is partially fulfilled at the time of the people that were spoken about then, in this case David and Solomon and so on. But it is completely fulfilled in Jesus. And there were things that David would not have understood as he heard God speak to him. He would think, well, that's okay. There's going to be Solomon and his son and his son, and things are going to be good. But the reality is that while some of that happened with Solomon, he built the temple. His kingdom, his reign was good most of the time. He was established. He didn't have any enemies. The kingdom stayed together under him. It was partially fulfilled in Solomon. But not completely. And then we come into the New Testament and we start to see hints that say, actually, this thing that God said didn't really speak about Solomon, but it spoke about somebody who would come afterwards. We go right to the beginning of the New Testament. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, we find in the first verse of the New Testament. And suddenly we get these two great people that we've thought about over the last few weeks. Abraham, the one whom God chose and called and said, I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. And David, the one whom God says, I've established you, I've given you a kingdom, I will make your name great. We suddenly find that their descendants is the one that Matthew is speaking about Jesus Christ. Jesus, when he's speaking to his disciples, speaks from time to time about the fact that he is going to have a kingdom. In Matthew 19, we find Jesus saying, when the Son of Man sits on his glorious throne. Luke 22, I confer on you a kingdom, just as my Father conferred one on me. So Jesus is telling them, look, God has given me a kingdom. I'm going to rule. I'm going to be established. My kingdom is going to be secure. Maybe one of the strongest hints is in the story around the birth of Jesus, as Luke records all that happens in the story of Elizabeth and of Mary and of John and of Jesus. In Luke 1:32, we get these words. Speaking of the baby who is going to be born to Mary, he will be great. He will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. He is the one that was spoken of those hundreds of years before. And in Hebrews, we find these words. About the Son, he says, your throne, O God, will last forever and ever, and righteousness will be the scepter of your kingdom. God is going to give to Jesus the throne of David. His throne will last forever. And so this promise, as the people looked at it, and they thought, well, it was okay with David, it was okay with Solomon, it got a bit dodgy after that, but what's happened? And as they went away into exile, and the chance of a kingdom being restored again got remoter and remoter, is that a word? More remote. And they came back from exile, and we think about these things a bit more over the next few weeks. They came back from exile. But there was still the sense that God had given a promise and that promise had not been fulfilled. So it was something that was yet to be. And so there was a growing expectation that somebody would come who would fulfill those promises. And we find that that person is Jesus. The judges, Saul, David, Solomon, other kings, there were bright moments. There were good moments in their history. But they failed. And the people suffered. Jesus, our eternal King, will never fail. But he will reign forever, fulfilling God's promise to David. And just as we saw in what God said to David, the fact that David was secure means that his kingdom is secure. That is where we find our confidence. To live as God's people today. We are citizens of that kingdom. That kingdom that is ruled and reigned over by our King. That one to whom God has fulfilled his promises. That one to whom God has said, I have given you all power and authority. The King is at God's right hand. The King is secure. And so the kingdom is secure. Nothing can attack it. Nothing can defeat it. Nothing can destroy it. Because the King is there. And the King will reign forever. So the responsibility for us is to recognize the one whom we serve, the one whom we follow. To recognize that our future and our status and our standing is secure. And to seek to faithfully live as citizens of that country. In a sense, and Paul speaks about this, in a sense we are ambassadors of that kingdom, of that King. Our country sends out ambassadors all around the world to represent our interests, to represent our country, and to go and speak to representatives of other nations, and to look after the things that are important to us, and to protect our interests. And one of the responsibilities of an ambassador is to live as a citizen of the country who has sent them, and to be a good representative of what that country is, of what that kingdom is, of who has sent them. We are those people. We are people whom God has sent into this world. Jesus said, just as the Father sent me, I am sending you. We follow a great King. We serve a great King. We are members, we are citizens of his kingdom. Joshua asked the people, who will you serve? The people in the days of Rehoboam rebelled against the king because of oppression. Some people followed the kings well, some people didn't. How well are we going to serve? How well are we going to follow our King? That King who will reign forever.